We talked about this young lady not too long ago. We mentioned she was actually here less than a year ago with the Notable Blends Women's A Cappella Group, who will be in the Middleborough area this coming Thursday. Debbie Graham Laird is an author who's actually now working on another fantastic novel in the near future. And Debbie is joining us once again for us this morning. Good morning, Deb.
Hey, good morning, Dom.
Nice to see you again.
Good. Thank you for inviting me back.
My pleasure. And I guess when we last time we saw each other during the last within the last year or so, we kind of trying to figure out what date we could make it here and stuff like that. But since we've seen you the last time, you've actually getting ready for another book, and one actually has recently come out as well.
That's true. The third story in my Gwen Andrews mystery series, called Bed, Breakfast, and Blackmail, mm-hmm. has just recently been published through Riverhaven Books in Whitman. It's up on Amazon, of course, as an ebook and a hardcover, and I always have my own stash of books if anyone's looking for an autographed copy.
And, you know, as I mentioned off the air a little while ago, it's you always have to find that right inspiration. How do you come up with some inspiration on some of these characters and basically the books that you've written?
Well, originally, I started the very first one called The Uninvited Guest, mm-hmm. and it was based on the abandoned library in the center of Norton, which is my town.
Right.
I always thought it would be the neatest place to live. So that is where I have my character live. Mm-hmm. I converted it into a home in my head. And I actually went one step further and moved the entire town of Norton to the coast of Massachusetts,
okay.
renamed it Harbor Falls. And then I was not a slave to street names and things like that. But I do refer to a lot of local landmarks in the area.
Yeah, you do. Harbor Falls, I'm always wondering, like, how come we don't have a town in Massachusetts named Harbor Falls? I mean, it sounds like it would be a great place, like, right out the water. I mean, I think some of the people in Norton, like yourself, probably wish they lived on the ocean at some point.
Some of my readers have actually said that. So that's a great idea. Let's move the town.
Yeah, let's move it. You know, just go to the town manager and say, all right, well, you know, I think the town manager is Mike Units, who I've known for a number of years. And I think he would be, actually, Mike, I remember him when he was working in the town of Holbrook. And I think Mike would probably enjoy that, you know, like, all right, he'd probably be the first one to move to a place called Harbor Falls. In this book, you also have some local landmarks that even on the cover of the latest book that you have as well.
That's true. The cover of Bed, Breakfast, and Blackmail is a photograph of the Blackington Inn, mm-hmm. which most of your readers will relate to. They gave me permission to use the photograph. And, of course, my publisher had to change the name on the sign to the Harbor Falls Bed and Breakfast mm-hmm. to match my story.
Yeah. I imagine that Kim and Tony Canova wouldn't mind having their name changed. I mean, I know Blackington has been around in the Attleboro area for many, many years, a prominent gentleman from our area. But it's kind of nice to have, I think when you're reading something, reading a great novel or a great book, whatever you're reading or writing, I think it's kind of nice to have a local twist when you're writing as well.
That's very true. The first one, The Uninvited Guest, mm-hmm. The photo on the front is the actual Norton Library, the old abandoned library. Mm-hmm. And the second one, which takes place in the spring of the year, this photograph was taken in the, was it the Brennan Smoke Shop? I don't want to get the name wrong, so let me look it up. Yes, Brennan's Smoke Shop on Route 44 in Raynham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We took an ashtray that I had found that is very key to the story, and that second story is called Where There's Smoke, There's Trouble. I took that ashtray that I got from the Bedrock Granite Company in mm-hmm. Norton, and we went into their storage room. I'm trying to think of what the name
warehouse
of it is.
Warehouse.
No. It's right in the store.
Showroom.
Now I can't even think of what it's called, but you're not allowed to smoke in there.
Okay.
So we just set it up. She said, move anything around that you like. We placed the ashtray on the table in the middle. My publisher had to add the smoke.
Okay.
And the red tip of the cigar and the blood on the corner of the ashtray, of course. So that's always fun to come up with the covers. In fact, she's already been working on the cover for the fourth story, mm-hmm. which is going to be called Wedding Interrupted.
Okay.
And that circles back around to Gwen's gardens.
Now, this one right here, Wedding Interrupted, sounds like something that possibly can't happen on a daily basis or a weekly basis at any wedding. I mean, something can go wrong, something can happen here and there, but most of the time, there's some great things that go on at weddings, as you know. But this may have a little bit of a twist to it.
Oh, of course it does.
Always does, right? Always have to have a twist.
You have to have a twist to make a story. Something has to happen in order for the story to progress.
Tell our listeners how basically you got started. I mean, you actually said, you know, as we kind of hinted earlier, you're also a singer as well.
I am. I sing in a barbershop quartet.
Mm-hmm. Notable Blend, which we know.
Well, Notable Blend is the chorus.
Right.
My quartet is Serendipity.
Right.
And I'm the baritone. Baritone sings all the notes that none of the other parts
right.
want to sing.
Right.
You know, we have a lot of fun doing that. We'll perform with the chorus when they're out and about, mm-hmm. or we'll go off on our own to sing as a quartet.
How did you get really interested in writing?
I didn't even consider doing it until I retired mm-hmm. Back in 2010.
Okay, wow.
Okay. Yeah, I'd always been an avid reader since a little girl. When I was growing up in Delaware, my mother, my sister, and I used to ride our ponies to the bookmobile that came around mm-hmm. probably once a month at that time, and we'd get our books and ride our ponies back home. So I've always been an avid reader, but never considered writing until yeah. I retired. I was sitting around one day, and I'm pretty sure I had just finished reading a Carolyn Hart mystery. Mm-hmm. And I love Carolyn Hart. I actually met her a few years ago. Oh. Delightful lady. She's published 50 stories now. Amazing. I admire the way that she develops her plots, how her characters interact with each other. And I closed the book, and I said, I can write one of these. Mm-hmm. Why can't I write one of these? I found out very quickly it's not as easy as you think. Mm-hmm. You have to come up with your characters. You have to decide what is the basic story. What's the problem? You have to create a problem in order to have a story.
Right.
And then you have to decide how your characters are going to solve the mystery. In a mystery, you have to know the ending before you begin.
Right.
Because you have to place the important clues and the important characters all the way along. The worst thing you can do to your reader is have them come to the very end of the book and all of a sudden the person who did it is someone they never met. And that's not a good thing.
I think one of my favorite type of book to read are mysteries, you know, mm-hmm. murder mysteries, whatever it is, kind of the whodunit types, you know, like the mm-hmm. old Ellery Queen stuff, mm-hmm. you know. Even when I was a freshman in high school, I read many of the Agatha Christies. In fact, I think the first book that I read with Agatha Christie, and then there were none, The Ten Little Indians. And I still remember some of the characters. And the funny thing is, I remember I went to LaSalle Academy in Providence, and I remember the language teacher when I had to write that book report for it. And it was actually one of the first book reports, a kind of funny story, the first kind of major book report that I wrote was about the Ten Little Indians. And I kind of knew going into it, you know, you had to, you know, kind of do a synopsis of the characters and what was going on. What I ended up doing, I read the whole book, and I didn't, I was so into that book that in the actual text of the whole thing, and this was all handwritten, I must have handwritten about 18 pages back and forth on both sides of the paper. And I was going through the lines that the author, Agatha Christie, was actually mentioning. You know, the first gentleman's name was Armstrong and all these other people that were there. And I was like quoting the book. And after it was all said and done, it was all finished, it was like 18 or 19 pages, I brought it to, and I had to, at the time when I was a freshman, I had to write two book reports for my English and language classes. And I did another crime story from Agatha Christie. And then little by little, I got my paper back about 4 or 5 days later, and I got an A+ on it. And I bring it home, and I was telling my mom about it, and I was like, hey, I got an A+, because she was helping me going through here. But she basically said, this is your project. You're going to do this. So I did. And I didn't bother typing because we had a small Royal typewriter, a manual typewriter. But I'm talking 1973. And I said, like, oh, I'm not going to do that. So anyway, make a long story short, I got an A+ on it. I actually had to read it in front of most of the class. And I only read the first couple of pages, but I got my taste of Agatha Christie back then because I said, my God, murder mysteries, whodunit, you know, is the way to go. I love these because it keeps you in suspense. And I think it kind of went around that same time when Ellery Queen, the television series, was on Sunday nights on NBC. And I watched that every single weekend. And I said to myself, maybe this is something I would like to do. And I never did that because I became in broadcasting. But my first work in radio was my last year of high school. We were basically had a small on campus radio station, which was based out of the senior lounge. It was only going through the thing. It's going through the school, but going back there, I actually read most of the Ellery Queen for the kids out there, and I read that, and I actually wrote a synopsis on like 4 or 5 Ellery Queen novels. And I always remember that the principal was listening in his office. He said, "You did a pretty good job." And and this an older gentleman, that came up to me. In fact, I didn't know until the following year, he actually became one of my professors in college. He moved from high school to college, and he says, "I want you to read that story that you did last year in my class." And I did. And it was like 3 or 4 Ellery Queen novels in one. And it had this about 20 different characters. And I can't even remember the name of the show, the name of it, what it was. But I think I had that inkling that I wanted to do it. But you started this, you started it saying that you started this kind of, after you retired. And you're still doing it as of today.
I am. And it's interesting to write a series. Number one, when your readers fall in love with the character in the first book, they're coming back to me and say, well, when's the second one coming out? Mm-hmm. And then the second one comes out. And then, when the third one? How about the fourth one? Because they fall in love with the characters, yeah, and they want to know what's going on with them. And the way I started thinking about doing a series rather than a standalone, I thought, well, maybe I'll do a trilogy. And then a lady joined our writers group, and she was doing a children's book about the seasons. I said, oh, well, maybe I need to do 4. Mm-hmm. So each of these 4 will be in a different season. The Uninvited Guest is in the fall. Where There's Smoke, There's Trouble is in the spring. Bed, Breakfast, and Blackmail is just before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And Wedding Interrupted will be in June, around the summer solstice. Okay. And I find that by having the different season and changing the location within my fictional town of Harbor Falls, it doesn't write itself, but it gives you all those opportunities to make it different, because mm-hmm. you don't want to have a cookie-cutter story from right. one to the other. You need it to be different. Gwen Andrews, my main character, is the constant between all 4.
Give us a little background on who Gwen Andrews actually is and what her background is, basically your character.
Right. Well, I made her a retired music professor from the local college, which, of course, is Wheaton. Mm-hmm. But in Harbor Falls, it's called Bailey's College. And Bailey was the maiden name of the Wheaton daughter, who actually was involved in forming the college okay. and the library itself. So that was my nod to her. I also made her a widow, because I wanted to have a subplot of romance. I wanted to get something else in there. And I took that just a little bit further, and I brought her husband back as a ghost.
Oh, nice.
I love ghosts.
Yeah, me too.
In fact, I've sat down with one of the ghost hunters in the area, and her name is Deb Ahern, and she has given me a lot of good stories to incorporate into my stories mm-hmm. for my characters.
I think when you're writing something like that, especially with a ghost hunter, a ghost writer, a ghost hunter, I think you get that suspense, the not the macabre, but you get that suspense that you don't want to put the book down, mm-hmm. I think. And as I said, I love reading about mysteries. And as I said, I think I'm the same way as you. I like this, you know, something about ghosts for some reason. I know, and there are many places in our listening area that do have a ghostly past. You know, when you're writing, when you're sitting down and writing, you do have inspiration. You do have a lot of inspiration. But what sort of a place does a writer like yourself need? I mean, you sit by the ocean or Harbor Falls, of course. But you know, you have to be away, or do you just find your a small nook in the house or an office to write those thoughts?
Well, I'm usually up very early in the morning, at least by 6, if mm-hmm. not 5. Mm-hmm. And I take those few first hours in the morning when my brain is fresh.
Yeah.
And that's when I do my writing, mm-hmm. At my laptop or my tablet. I have a girl cave. I have the dining room table with my tablet. On occasion, I'll go to the library where I can just be totally undisturbed mm-hmm. and work on it.
I think when you have a girl cave or a she cave,
the she shed.
She shed, that's right, the she shed, which my wife actually just did this year in our backyard underneath an eave behind our garage. And she'll go out there and read a book or do whatever, and just sit there for a while. But it's also nice, just to get away from inside the house, radio, television, magazines, whatever, and to kind of just be yourself, out there. When you're putting something together, as I said, these books that you've put together, the first one, was it tougher than, it had to be a little bit tougher to go to the first one, and now this fourth one that you're doing must have been a lot easier for you, like, oh, this is nothing.
Well, you pick up the technique mm-hmm. of how many narrators should you have?
Okay.
How are they going to talk to each other? Exactly what are their emotions? You don't want to use lazy words, either verbs or nouns. You want adjectives, something that really says what you want to say. Mm-hmm. And you pick that up as you go from one to the next.
How about the characters? I know some of the times people write about fictional characters. Sometimes they have a character in their book that are real, but they just change the name. Some of the people that in your books, do you get them from day-to-day life, or it's like, all right, let's make up Janet or whoever it is, let's do this, and then and there's some characteristics of a real person that you may know.
Most of my characters are a combination of different people that mm-hmm. I've met during my life. It's not one particular person.
Right.
And that's another thing you have to be careful of when you name your characters.
Right, yeah.
Do not use the name of a relative, someone you went to high school with, anybody you actually know. Come up with a totally different name. Mm-hmm. And to that end, a lot of times, once you figure out how old is your character, when were they born, you can go to the U.S. Census and get the top 1,000 names for babies.
Right, right.
And I usually go down at least 25 to 50 names to mm-hmm. get something unusual. And you want your characters to have their names, different syllables, different endings, different letters at the beginning. I always keep a list of first and last name for each of the stories so that I don't duplicate too much, because mm-hmm. it's confusing. If you have a Brian and what's another B name?
Bill or
whatever. If you have two B names, right?
Yeah, right.
And I had an audiobook I was listening to, and every time the characters, I said, oh, which guy is that? So you need to be very careful when you're naming your characters.
Right.
One of the most fun ones I had, and that was for the second story, Where There's Smoke, There's Trouble, my detective in here. I was driving home from North Attleboro to Norton, and I think I was on High Street, mm-hmm. and I looked up at the street sign, and it said Benjamin Road, and the next one was Snowcrest Avenue, or whatever the tags are. And I said, Benjamin Snowcrest, is that a wonderful name?
Oh, yeah.
So he ended up to be the detective in story two, and he has totally white hair. He's an older gentleman. And whenever my reader bumps into Ben Snowcrest, they remember he's the character with the white hair.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, that's the inspiration as well. What I've seen in some of the passion and listening to you in your voice and saying all this, you like to kind of keep it on a local level that you, and you've been doing that. And it's kind of nice to have, you know, like landmarks, as you said, you know, you have the landmarks of the Blackington Inn, and you've got the library and stuff like that, you know, and the name, you know, from the streets of North Attleboro and stuff, that you like to keep it, you know, so readers will, hey, you know, maybe I can, I'll go to that place, you know, or they, or if they get the book, like, that looks like the Blackington Inn, you know, and it is. But I've noticed that even the last time that you were here with our singing, you were talking to me off the air a while back, that you like to keep everything, you don't like to, like, go away out there. You know, you want to keep it, as I said, you want to keep everything kind of local so your readers won't astray from you as well.
That's true. In fact, because I moved the town of Norton to the coast, mm-hmm. It's between Plymouth and Hingham. It's on that side. And it's not any particular town.
Right.
It's made up. But I refer to, like, Duxbury Beach.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Powder Point Bridge. You know, things like that to keep it local. But,
yeah.
You know, you say this series is local. It's in New England. But when I finish the fourth story, I'm going to write a standalone that's going to take place in Delaware, which is where I was born.
Right, okay.
And raised. And I have to come up with a whole story for that.
Now, listening to this and reading some of the synopsis online with these books, I can see, and this is certainly, you are the author, you know what you're doing here, that's for sure. With some of these books and some of the stories in here, I could see a movie. Has that crossed your mind?
Well, actually, a lot of people had said, you should sell this to Hallmark.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I've never even considered. I can't imagine doing that. I can't imagine them being interested.
Yeah.
Or how would you even go about doing it?
Yeah. I know that, you know, it's amazing how, you know, that some of the authors out there will say the same thing, and then all of a sudden it gets to be, you know, either on Hallmark or an HBO movie, or sometimes, you know, you could be a J.K. Rowling, you know, and like, boom, it's a Harry Potter thing, and they're just making millions off of these things. And it's amazing how, you know, when you put something like this together, anything is possible, I guess.
That's very true.
You know, and I mean, do you see yourself maybe possibly, you know, going down the line? So let me retract that story again, or that question. Where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years with some of these characters and, you know, hopefully more books?
Well, after I do the four in the Gwen Andrews series and then I write the standalone in Delaware, I'm thinking of doing another series about a young lady who is in these books, mm-hmm. but she is just now, she's going to, in her 20s, and she's just now proceeding with her life. And I don't want to give too much away, but she is also in Harbor Falls.
Okay.
And she ends up living in Gwen's converted library.
Hmm. You know, as I said, I think some of our listeners would love to figure out, you know, some, because I think a lot of these, I do know that some of our listeners love to read a lot, and I can think of at least a half a dozen of people out there right now that listen to the show every single morning, and because they tell me on email every once in a while, other than, you know, giving me music suggestions and requests, this, you know, I know of two or three people out there that say, you know, oh, I just read this book, and I just read this book, and here and there, you know, whether it be you know, a love story or a murder mystery or whatever it is. Growing up in it, you said you didn't really have, you know, you didn't start this until after you retired, but you must have had some inkling growing up that, you know, what was your favorite books to read as a young girl?
Oh, well, you know, the typical Nancy Drew.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and the Hardy Brothers, mm-hmm. and all of that. And, you know, the miscellaneous stories that would come out of that bookmobile when I was a kid. And I couldn't tell you what their names were now.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when I got older, you have Wuthering Heights.
Sure.
And that whole genre.
Yeah, you know, and I think, is it Wuthering Heights? I think today is Emily Bronte's birthday, actually. When she passed away, she was only 30 when she died. But here's, you know, and that's the sad to think of that. There are so many of those authors that were that, you know, lived to be either young or older, and people are still reading those books today.
Oh, yeah, the classics.
They never die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember my youngest grandson, a granddaughter, I should say, she's 15 now, and I remember, because they live down in Texas, and I remember when they came up here a couple of years ago, we went actually down there a couple of years ago, but I remember when they first came up to here to Attleboro to visit us, to my wife and I, it was back in 2005. And I still remember my oldest grandson, who is now 19, I can't believe he's that old. I remember him sitting on my lap. Last year, I actually sat on his lap, so I did that. I said, all right, Darren, I'm going to sit on your lap. Okay, Grandpa, all right. But I remember reading to him when he first came up here in 2005, some of the old classics, like the Tom Sawyer, the Huckleberry Hound, Huckleberry Finn, and some of the other books that I remember growing up, reading. And, and then a couple of years later, he was actually reading those books and said, this is for my grandfather. I'm gonna read. And then he actually, and the funny thing is, the book that he read was another novel. And he actually, I don't know how he did this, but why he did it, which I'm grateful. He actually wrote a toward the back end of the book where the biography is. He wrote a little paragraph to me how he thanked me for reading him, these stories growing up. And now he's like, when I was down there last year down in Texas, like I said, he was 18 years old, and he was still reading the same book. So he still has it with him in his bedroom. And so he said, and that's still the little, because he sent it to me, but he also had another copy that he found in his local library, and he wrote in it, he bought the book, and he wrote the same synopsis that he wrote to me, thanking Grandpa Dominic for, being his pal, and I'm still his pal to this day.
That's sweet.
It is. It is sweet. And then our youngest granddaughter, who is now 15, she was only a couple of years old back then. My wife actually had her on her lap and reading a story back then as well. Nowadays, she has that, I don't remember that. But her mom, our daughter-in-law, will remember that. Like, oh, this is when Grandma Carol did this and that, and Grandpa Dominic did this and that. So they always keep that with them. They always keep that with them. With your books, when you started the first one was, once again, was what now?
The Uninvited Guest.
The Uninvited Guest. The Uninvited Guest, which we have a little synopsis on this book right now. This is, now Gwen is a widow, you said, right?
Correct.
Okay. And we don't want to give anything away because we want people to get out there and read them. Where can people get these books, first of all?
Well, they're available on Amazon, mm-hmm. as either an ebook for the Kindle readers or soft cover. And I always have a stash myself.
One other thing that, before we go any further, this is something that I've actually had authors on in the past, in the past couple of years. I'm a book. I like to have it in front of me.
Okay? The actual book in your hand.
An actual book. That's why we do a lot with the Attleboro Public Library. We have the directors and some of the librarians here on a continual basis. When the new public library director was here back a few months ago, Christine Johnson, she sends me information like on a weekly basis of what's coming up and this new book is coming in and stuff like that. We've had some of the children's librarians here a few months ago. When these people are coming in, I think they appreciate me having them in the studio, because as we said on the air one time with them, people are still reading books, but I think nowadays people are going to the Kindle and stuff like that and not reading as much. I don't know about you, but I still would like to have that book with the smell of the brand new book in front of me,
right.
Reading it.
The smell of that paper is
exactly
incomparable.
And you're the same way.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're the same way, right?
I am. I do a lot of audio books, though, when I'm driving.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when I'm working around the yard. Makes the time fly.
Yeah, that's something that my wife was doing a while back, too. In fact, she still does that every once in a while with the audiobooks. It's kind of nice, even if you're, having it in your car, whatever it is. And I remember years ago, was looking for some of these audiobooks on CD. I started listening to them in the car when the cassettes were big. But, and I think when you do something like that, you really get into your characters. Even if you're not wearing a headset, because, you shouldn't be wearing the headsets, well, because it's distracting from sirens or anything like that. But when you're doing something like that, I think And if you are in the car or wherever you're listening, or even if you're at home listening to it, and you put that, and I've done this before, you're listening to that in your head. It's like you are really getting into your character, I think, and especially with these books, I think people will get a lot out of it. When you have these books out there, people are buying these books and here and there. What are you hearing from some of your readers or the public out there, about your books that you've written?
All of my readers have come back to me and said they absolutely love the stories. They love Gwen. They can't wait for the next story. Mm-hmm. I've only had two readers come back and say that they figured out whodunit before the end of the book, and that was for The Uninvited Guest. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty good, because especially with a mystery, your reader wants to figure it out as they go, but they really don't want to figure it out mm-hmm. until the very end and find out, well, who did it? And then they go back and say, oh, yeah, I remember this and this and this and this as the story progressed. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I should have picked that up. But if the author does a good job with it, the reader is, you're not trying to fool them. You're just trying to give them that mystery that they long for.
Yeah. Are you looking at, kind of the same type of books in the near future, or you're going to change it a little bit, maybe with a love story or a comedy or something like that, or you just want to stay on this genre?
Well, I think the standalone that will take place in Delaware, mm-hmm. I'm going to make that a suspenseful romance.
Oh, good, yeah.
The character is going to be a younger person, and I was her age at one point, so I can relate to that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure exactly how that story is going to unfold. It's in the back of my head. Yeah. I still have to finish number four with Gwen before I tackle that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most important thing right there as well. But when you're coming into a whodunit story, something like that, as you said, people will kind of figure out who did it and it's a whodunit with these things. That's always an interesting task right there, because you've got to make that your character, whoever is going to be the murderer or whoever it's going to be. You kind of got to almost build up their character during the novel. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you're reading a book about a whodunit story, you almost get a chance a style. And I've seen this in the past where it may not be that person, mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you have a twist. There was a play in Attleboro that I actually played the butler at the senior center. And I was the butler, but I did not do it because I was killed in the thing. this was a comedy on the fact. It was almost like the Ten Little Indians, but it was called And Then There Was One, I think it was called. And then there was one. It was a comedy drama whodunit where you didn't know who was going to do it. You thought the butler, you thought I was going to be doing it, and then I did not. Myself and one of the other detectives, we were one of the first people to be shot or killed. Mm. And then at the end of it, we all got up because we were not killed. We were just faking. So, and that had that theme, all of a sudden at the end of the play, here we are getting up. It's like, where were you? And then all of a sudden it made a turn. But it was long, hard hours of work. And we only did it on, I think, one weekend at one of the churches in Attleboro. But I think when people see something like that, and I know this for a fact, they really came out for us. This was the first time that the Senior Center Theater Group put this event on. Because we were always doing plays and productions that I was running the music for. And this was the first time that I had nothing to do with the music. I was actually one of the actors. And I had my tuxedo on, the white gloves. But making the pratfall on the ground was a little tough, because I actually fell on Rusty D'Arcanti, the former publisher of the Sun Chronicle. He played the detective. And I played the butler, as I said. But it was a fun program to do. Somebody had asked us after we finished it. They said, "Is this actually from a book?" And we said, "Yes, it was." And some lady from Maine actually wrote the book, and we actually had her. She was supposed to come down to the area, but she never made it. She's now down in Manchester, New Hampshire now. But I I occasionally email her once in a while, and she every once in a while she'll give us some updates, you know, on other books that she has done. We've never really followed up on any other book that she has done, but as I mentioned before about movies, plays, productions, I see these movies on television that could be a theatrical production, and I've seen none of them. I was watching a movie just yesterday on Turner Classics, Mr. Roberts with Henry Fonda, which I haven't seen in a long time, one of my favorites. That was originally taken from a play. Some of these characters, I could see some of these from these characters in your books becoming an on-stage production as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Someone else had suggested that I approach the Black Box Theater in Mansfield,
yeah.
And I did send an email to the director over there, but I never heard back from him. So he probably gets these type of requests all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I know, you know, the Black Box Theater in Mansfield, you have the Attleboro Community Theater, you've got the Norton Singers, who they're going to be doing another show. They're actually coming on in studio with us on Monday. They're doing Chess, which was another tremendous production as well. But when you see these characters, they're all in different types of genres. They're all different lifestyles. When you put some of your characters together, as we mentioned earlier, you get them from who you know them or not know them. Did they have all types of workforces? They're all different types of jobs they have, basically. Did they have all different? I'm trying to get that right word to say it correctly.
Lifestyles, I guess.
Lifestyles, yeah.
Okay.
And they have different lifestyles out there as well.
Yeah, you have to. All your characters and a lot. What you were talking about was innocent suspects, mm-hmm. or also known as red herrings. The person looks like they may have done it, but they really didn't. But all of the characters you bring in to flesh out your story, they're all different. They're men, they're women, they're different ages. One's a bookstore owner, or one's somebody you worked with at the college, you know, a variety of characters. And when I was learning how to write, as I penned The Uninvited Guest, I was always, well, how do you actually get that character down in the story? How do you do that? And they recommend you don't do a laundry list. Like, you just don't sit there and describe what that character looks like. Oh, she has blonde hair and blue mm-hmm. eyes. You work those details into the story as it's moving along. And I just forgot what I was going to say. Isn't that terrible?
Okay.
It's interesting to develop these characters. In fact, I give an author talk. I've been doing that since I've published the first one. And one of the things I show them, I bring a lot of my how-to books as a show and tell. Mm-hmm. When I was developing the bad girl in The Uninvited Guest, I bought a book called Bullies, Bastards, and Bitches.
Okay.
And one of the things you learn is if you have a bad girl or a bad man, they're not all bad. They have to have some sort of a balance. And in The Uninvited Guest, by the time you get to the end of the story, you understand where this character, her name is Henrietta Wickham, which I love the name. I came up with that one. You understand why she treats people so badly, but doesn't forgive her actions, and you just understand a little better. But I just remember what I was getting at a moment ago. At one of the classes I've taken, and I go to conferences and writers' retreats all the time, and they say, get that character down on the paper. I said, well, how do you do that? Exactly how do you do that? And this lady said, everything they say and everything they do imparts their character to your reader. I said, perfect. I can do that. They're doing things. They're saying things. And now my reader understands who they are.
That's another interesting thing that you just mentioned about getting out there and speaking to your public out there. You're the public out there, you know, wants to know about their characters. And what is something that you would ask or you would tell your, you know, the people out there if they do want to become an up-and-coming writer?
Well, one of the things I challenge my audiences, I say, and a lot of them are senior centers, retirement communities, mm-hmm. libraries, that type of thing. So they're the elderly population, like me. I'm not young. But I challenge them.
You don't look it.
I don't look it. Thank you. Thank you, Dom. I challenged them to check those street signs. I told you about Benjamin Snowcrest. Yeah. I said, watch those street signs. When you see something that, and you put those two names together and say, what a great character name. Go home and write a story about them. Mm-hmm. Said, you don't have to take it as far as I did. You don't have to be published. But write a story. You'll find it's a lot of fun. Keeps your brain alive. And just fills your hours with enjoyment.
Yeah, a lot of the people that you may talk to, you know, have that idea that, hey, you know, maybe it's something, you know, if they are, if they can do it, yes. You know, unfortunately, some of the older people may not be able to do it, you know, something may be setting in, dementia and stuff like that. But it's, I mean, they're not talking about, you know, that really. But when you go to senior centers like that, you may find an aspiring person who may want to, like, you know, maybe this would be a bucket list that they'll do in the mm-hmm. know, in the near future for them.
Exactly. In fact, I gave a talk recently at Magnolia Heights in Franklin.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great name too, Magnolia.
Magnolia Heights. Doesn't it sound Southern? Doesn't
I know.
It? But the lady who organized, who scheduled me in to talk to them, some of her residents are talking about writing, and she mm-hmm. wants me to head up a writing class of sorts. Mm-hmm. At that location.
That would be awesome. I know that some of the senior centers do have writing classes, so the library has their own writing workshop, stuff like that. I think it's important to remember that, you know, writing is not easy, that's for sure. You know, writing is not easy at all, and especially writing a full book. I mean, yeah, you can write it. What's actually easier for you, writing a book like this or just like a short story?
Actually, I don't do much with short stories. What I do, though, every morning my sister writes a poem and tells me what she's going to do that day. And she gives me either a newspaper tidbit from the late 1800s because she does family research. She comes upon these interesting news bits. Or she'll give me a set of three words. I take either that news bit or the three words and I will write a poem back to her. So those are a prompt. Mm-hmm. But it's only a poem. It's not a short story. I don't really have time to do that. I'm too busy with my novels.
I think I was talking to an author about a year ago, I remember her telling me, even off the air, she was telling me, she said she got started writing novels and books. She was actually from the Boston area, if I remember correctly. She was from the Boston area. And I remember her telling me that the reason how she started is she used to read, their local newspaper. She from the Hartford area, the Hartford Courant. And she would write articles to the editor. She would do the opinion page and stuff like that. And she said, you know, I can write what's my thoughts to the editor or the opinion page, and why not write in longer forms? And so she started doing it. I think she may have passed away now during the summer. The winter, I believe. But I remember her telling us, because she was actually on the phone lines with us, and she said the reason that she got into it is because of writing these in the newspaper, and she started writing longer forms, and it became, I think she wrote three or four books, and they were drama love stories. And then her last book was a comedy, what had a different twist to it, whatever the book was. I think that book, if I remember correctly, the book, I think that one was published in February after her passing. But as I always remember it now, I'm thinking back, that her publisher sent me a copy of that book. And now I have no clue where the heck that book is now. But I always remember her saying to me that she got started just writing in the opinion page, and she enjoyed it. Something that you wouldn't even believe it. You know, you wouldn't even know. But apparently you could start writing, you know, anything and just write down your thoughts.
Mm. I think you just have to get over the fear of doing it.
Yeah. I think one of the items, too, is when you read your novels and your books to different people, you get a sense that you got to live that character. If you're reading it, you also, I mean, I always remember, I love to read in a character, especially with these books here, and then There Were None. You almost have to, feel the passion in their voices. You must be doing this as well. You might have got to kind of have that same idea when you're reading to the public, you know, from your book as well.
I do include a short reading at the end of my author talk. Mm-hmm. To get them into the story to see if they want to know the rest of the story.
Yeah, I like that kind of that Paul Harvey thing.
Exactly. My author talk itself, though, is about the process of writing, mm-hmm. and that's how they start to think about maybe they can do it. Hmm. I talk about developing characters, coming up with the idea in the first place, doing research, joining a writer's group, all of those details that are involved with creating a novel.
Right. Debbie Graham Leard is joining us. She'll be here for a few moments more here. And we're going to take a very quick break, a little water break, I believe, right now. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Stay with us. Okay, we've got about 7 minutes in front of the hour. Paul Healy coming up, of course, at the top of the hour. And Debbie Graham Leard is joining me for the last few moments as well. She's going to read some pieces of information on one of the other books that you wrote back in 2016 called The Uninvited Guest.
Okay, just as a little setup, my main character Gwen has been, you could say she was blackmailed into hosting a judge who is coming from out of town, but she doesn't know who it is. So here is the end of one of the opening chapters. The hands on the clock dragged as Gwen waited for the judge's arrival. Not one to waste time, she returned to her flower beds, removed spent blooms, yanked weeds, and scattered fragrant cedar mulch. Bringing her gardens back to life after 2 years of neglect had taken more effort than she'd estimated. Of course, without Parker working beside her, every chore took more than twice as long. Each day, the flowers and bushes rewarded her with new sprigs of emerging buds, easing Gwen's ache for Parker. Mother Nature, the best grief counselor. The rumble of an engine echoed from the western side of the old library. No doubt the judge, Gwen grumbled. This should be interesting. She stepped from a patch of Shasta daisies, crossed the back lawn, and bypassed the small-scale fish pond, stopping at the top of the driveway. A sleek black sedan with Vermont plates came to a stop. The driver's door on the other side flew open, and a tall woman emerged. She rested her forearms on the car's shiny rooftop and gazed across at Gwen. The eyes were hidden behind huge sunglasses, but the smirk was all too familiar. Gwen's mouth gaped open. It couldn't be her. Please, no, anyone but her.
You have, I love the tone in your voice, for number one, and I love the way that you put your characters together. I gotta ask you one question here. You know, I know that you live in the Norton area. You live mm-hmm. in Norton, and a lot of people may not realize that you still have Callie, right? Your cat.
No, actually, she passed away.
Oh, she did.
This winter.
Sorry.
Yeah.
One other person who has been behind you a lot of times is Vinny.
Yes, my husband, Vinny.
How does Vin think about this, you know, since you started this a few years ago?
He is so supportive. Mm-hmm. I am so lucky to have a husband like him. When I need to go off and do some writing, he'll go off and he'll go to his man cave, mm-hmm. or he'll be off golfing somewhere or fishing, and that gives me the time to concentrate on my writing. He's a wonderful man.
Does he get into it as well, your characters, or is he an aspiring author or not?
He's not an aspiring author, and he's very good at reading magazines and newspapers, mm-hmm. But he's not a good novel reader, so it does take him a while to get through
my
stories.
Plus, with Vinny there, you get updates or ideas from him. Does he give you any feedback on some of the stuff that you've written?
Not so much feedback, but... he is partially part of some of the characters.
Okay.
Yeah. One facet of him will be part of one character. Another facet will be a part of a different character. Mm-hmm. So I do base some things on him.
And family too. How do they feel about you? You know.
They are all very proud.
Been a part of any of the books?
Well, I gave Gwen a sister, mm-hmm. and she is very loosely based on my own sister.
Oh, okay.
So it's not an identical duplication.
You know, I think a lot of people out there, you know, and I do know a number of people out there who love to read, as I mentioned earlier, once again, how can people get in touch with you if they want an idea, maybe put an idea out in your head, and how people can get in touch with you and get some of these books as well?
Well, I welcome anyone to send me an email, debi-lee@comcast.net. I love to sit down with anyone and talk about writing and books and stories and characters and plots and all of that. So I welcome any of your listeners to send me an email.
Yeah, and I think when you put something like that, you also, you know, you get some feedback from your from the listeners and some of the people that been reading these books. As you said, this next one, once again, is the number four is?
Number four is Wedding Interrupted.
Yeah, and that is actually being done now, right?
Yes, I'm working on that now.
So in the near future, that people will see that on shelves or wherever?
All of them are available on Amazon.
On Amazon. Yeah. So Debbie Graham Leard, L-E-A-R-D, that is her name. And Deb, we definitely want to have you back again towards the end of this next book so that we can start promoting this again for you as well.
Oh, well, thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thanks. Thanks so much, Deb, and good luck for this next one as well.
All right, Dom. Thank you for having me.
All right. All right, that is going to wrap it up for yours truly here on this Tuesday morning. We do it all again bright and early tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. is right here on AM 1320.